websites of some foreign television stations. The easiest way to find streaming or purchasable media is through Wikipedia. To search for your TV show, you need to figure out your TV show's foreign title. The West Wing, for instance, is called À la Maison Blanche in French. Wikipedia is the simplest way to find it. Look up your show in English, switch to your target language on the bottom left of the page, and you'll find the title you're looking for. Then search for that same title on Google, and you'll usually find some decent purchasing options. 4. Speaking opportunities. We've already gone through the main options in the speech in the Game of Taboo section in this chapter, but we'll summarize them here for convenience. Your first options are at home. Depending upon where you live and what language you're learning, you may have access to local classes and tutors in your target language. Craigslist.com is a pretty good way to find a tutor. But as long as you have a high-speed internet connection, you also have these options. LiveMocha.com, LiveMocha.com. This is for long conversations in the style of kind of a dating website. You can also consider busuu.com, B-U-S-U-U.com, mylanguageexchange.com, and language-exchanges.org, or italki.com, italki.com, for paid professional teachers and tutors. If you're looking for conversation topics, try one of these. First, you can try fluent-forever.com/conversation-questions, which will give you a handy list of conversation topics. Next, you can try conversationstarters.com, which has questions like, what is one thing you miss about being a kid? YouRather.com, which gives you questions like, would you rather always be naked or always be itchy? There is Gregory Stock's Book of Questions, which has questions like, do you tend to listen or talk more in conversations? Or Smith & Doe's Book of Horrible Questions. For $1 million, would you eat a human foot with the bone removed? Your next options for speech practice are abroad. If you're looking for intensive programs abroad, then you'll have to rely upon Google. You can search for things like Learn French in France, or rely on word of mouth. At the moment, there is no centralized service that collects information about these programs and reviews them. You'll find the cheapest and often the best programs in centralized universities and community colleges. The Università per Stranieri, University for Foreigners in Perugia, Italy. The Escuelas Oficiales de Idiomas, official schools of language throughout Spain, and so on. In between. The most intensive, immersive language courses are offered at Middlebury College, middlebury.edu, in Vermont. I'm not aware of any other schools that take an official, mandatory, no English policy. If your language isn't offered there, then there are several intensive programs in the United States that you might want to consider. You'll find them listed at fluent-forever.com/immersion. For the advanced students. If you're in a position to use the tools in this chapter, you've already reached at least an intermediate level. But suppose you really knew a lot about your language. Suppose you've studied it for years, and you've just forgotten much of what you've learned. Or perhaps you're just looking for a way to feel a little more comfortable with the four main skills: speaking, writing, listening, and reading. My advice for you is roughly the same as my advice for anyone else. If you want to get more comfortable listening, then listen. And if you want to get more comfortable speaking, then speak. But I can recommend some strategies that might help you do this more efficiently. If you're looking for a way to refresh and maintain a language with the least amount of effort, then watch a lot of TV. I did this recently with my French. I'd forgotten a lot over the course of learning Russian and Hungarian, and I wanted to bring it back. And so I started watching ridiculous amounts of television and film. Within a month, I got through 3 seasons of 24 and 5 films. By the end of that month, I was once again dreaming in French. It's a tremendously fun way to maintain a language. With a bit more effort, you can steadily improve an advanced level language. The most efficient way to do this is by writing on lang-8.com and speaking with tutors on italki.com. Turn every mistake you make and every new word you want to learn into flashcards. Use a frequency list as conversation or essay fodder. Find the words you don't know, discuss them with a tutor or write about them, and make as many mistakes as you can, and tell your tutor to catch them all. If you're constantly speaking and writing, and you're using your SRS to learn from all of your mistakes, then you're going to improve at breakneck speed. Chapter 7. Epilogue. The Benefits and Pleasures of Learning a Language. The brain is like a muscle. When it is in use, we feel very good. Understanding is joyous. Carl Sagan. You bought this audiobook along with a small pile of other books or software. A textbook, a phrasebook, a dictionary or two, a pronunciation guide, and so on. You may have enrolled in a class or found a private tutor or even signed up for an immersion program. You spent hundreds of hours making and reviewing thousands of flashcards. So what do you get for your time, effort, and money? What reward is at the end of your journey? If you break it all down, you get a lot. From an economic standpoint, you've opened up a world of new employment opportunities, both at home and abroad. Despite the prevalence of English, the demand for foreign language ability has only increased in recent years as we grow more and more interconnected. The United States, in particular, has found itself lagging behind the rest of the world in this regard. Due to an increasingly global economy, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics has projected a 42% growth in demand for interpreters and translators between 2010 and 2020, placing these jobs among the top 10 occupations with the highest projected growth. If translation's not your thing, you might want to consider secret agent. Seriously. If you've learned a so-called mission-critical language, Arabic, Chinese, Dari, Korean, Pashto, Persian, Russian, or Urdu, then the CIA will eagerly snap you up and hand you $35,000 per language as a hiring bonus on your very first day, not to mention additional monthly language maintenance bonuses. Every time I've been to an immersion program at Middlebury College, the CIA recruiters are always there in their crisp suits and snappy haircuts, putting on recruitment seminars. They're desperate for multilingual people. Even if you don't change careers, you've potentially increased your salary by 5 to 20%. Employers are willing to pay more for bilingual employees, even when those employees never need their extra languages to do their work. Employers see language skills as a sign of intelligence and competence, and that puts you, their newly bilingual employee, in higher demand. These employers aren't basing their decisions on appearances. You don't just seem smarter when you know another language. You become smarter. By learning a language, you permanently change structures in your brain. Bilingual brains are measurably different than monolingual brains. Certain brain regions are more developed. And recent studies show that you don't need to be bilingual from birth to show these telltale signs of bilingualism. You just need to learn a language and maintain it. The better you learn it, and the longer you maintain it, the more your brain will change. How does this affect you in your daily life? When you learn a language, you permanently improve your memory. You'll be able to memorize faster and easier. You'll multitask better. Bilingual people are better at focusing on tasks and ignoring distractions. They're more creative. They're better problem solvers. Bilingual students beat monolinguals in standardized tests of English, math, and science. All of these advantages, collectively known as the bilingual effect, aren't the result of natural inborn intelligence. Most bilinguals never choose to be bilingual. They just happen to grow up in bilingual families. The bilingual effect is a kind of learned intelligence. And by picking up a new language, you get it too. Why does the bilingual effect exist? There's a lot of research left to do, but current results point to a particularly peculiar cause. Learning a language makes it harder to think. When you learn French, you effectively implant a little Frenchman in your head who never shuts up. Even when you're trying to think in English, he sits in the background, mumbling away in French. There's no off switch. Remember those tip-of-the-tongue moments from Chapter 2? Bilinguals get them more frequently than monolinguals, because they have twice as many words to search through. Bilinguals even have a harder time naming simple objects. That's a table. That's a cat. While they can usually find the words they're looking for, they take longer to find them, because they're always wrestling with that damn mumbling Frenchman. Now on the surface, this sounds terrible, like a kind of learned schizophrenia. But your brain adapts. In the process of learning to speak a new language, you necessarily learn to muffle and ignore your native language. you learn to focus in the face of constant linguistic distraction, and as a result, your brain gets better at focusing in general. It's like walking around with weights attached to your ankles. After a while, your body adapts, you get stronger, and you forget all about them. Language learning is a form of strength training for your brain. Not only does your brain get stronger, it gets healthier too. Bilingual brains are more resistant to the wear and tear of age. Studies show a marked delay in the onset of dementia and Alzheimer's disease for bilinguals. On average, elderly bilinguals will show symptoms of dementia 5 years later than monolinguals. And if they've learned more than two languages, then the effects are even stronger. Beyond all the economic and mental benefits of language learning lies the greatest treasure of all. Language learning is good for your soul. It connects you to new people and a new culture in ways you could never imagine. Italians are different when they're speaking Italian, and German poetry is exquisitely beautiful, but only in German. You get to see different sides of people and cultures, sides which are hidden from the English-speaking world. You even get to see different sides of yourself. I gesture in Italian. I have to gesture in Italian. When I speak Italian, I yearn to travel and see beautiful things, relax in the sun, and eat delicious food. All on its own, the Italian language fills my mind with happy memories, because all of my words are connected to the moments in which I learned and used them. Gelato isn't the Italian word for ice cream. It's a 6-week, almost religious quest for the best gelato in Italy. It's strawberry gelato in Rome and pistachio gelato in Perugia. It's eating the best coconut gelato you could ever imagine while watching the waves roll into a sunny harbor in the Cinque Terre. My Italian words aren't just the everyday words I've used all my life. They're a distinct set of memories that I formed with my own hands and brain. In learning that language, I created a new mind and a new personality for myself. That is the dearest gift of language learning. You get to meet a new you. And this isn't just my own insanity speaking. I've seen this in all the multilingual people I've met. One of my French teachers was an American woman who had married a Frenchman and moved to Paris. When she spoke French, she was one of the most elegant, intelligent women I have ever met. On the last day of our French program, we finally switched to English. In an instant, that same elegant woman suddenly transformed into a quick-witted, sailor-mouthed party girl from Texas. And that's not to say that her French persona was somehow fake. It was just a different side of her personality, and it came to the surface in her French. At times, a foreign language can feel like a mask. It's a game of make-believe. You're playing the role of some French guy, and you're acting out a conversation with some friends. In these moments, you occasionally catch yourself saying things you never would have said in English. You're more open. You speak more freely. After all, it's not really you. It's just a game. But that's not quite true. It is you. And you can only meet that side of yourself in a foreign language. A quick reminder. If you'd like to see the flashcard designs in this section, go to fluent-forever.com/audiobook. The Gallery, a guide to the flashcards that will teach you your language. This book is about many things: language, the human brain, the learning process, the essence of words. But when you get down to brass tacks, it's about learning languages with flashcards. We've all encountered flashcards in school. They usually had a prompt on one side, prompt, the dodo bird, and an answer on the back side, answer. This is an extinct flightless bird that once lived on the island of Mauritius. And you may have made stacks of them for your school tests. If you did, you shuffled through them, saw which ones you knew already, and then quizzed yourself again on the ones you didn't. If you were really anxious about an upcoming test, then you might have turned the stack of cards over and seen whether you knew them in the other direction. New prompt, this is an extinct flightless bird. New answer, the dodo bird. Then you take your test and shelve your cards, or throw them out. Flashcards like these can be a bit boring, but they do a good job of preparing you for tests. If you study them in one direction, prompt, the dodo bird, you're prepared for certain test questions. For instance, what is a dodo? If you study them in the other direction, prompt, this is an extinct flightless bird, then you're prepared for other test questions. What flightless bird once lived on Mauritius? And if you study them in both directions, you could handle either dodo-related scenario. If you wanted to become a dodo expert, you could make a giant stack of flashcards covering every aspect of the dodo in as many directions as possible. Where did the dodo live? The island of Mauritius. How big was the dodo? 3 feet tall, between 22 and 40 pounds. Could the dodo fly? Nope. And so on. The more ways you study the same information, the better you know your material. I want you to become an expert in your language, but you should have some fun in the process. So I'm going to make some changes to this tired index card-shaped theme. First and foremost, we're sticking all of your flashcards into an SRS, which will tell you when to study each and every card. As we discussed in Chapter 2, this makes them a lot more effective and a lot more fun. You're playing a constant game with yourself, trying to see how long you can go before you forget one of your cards. Because of this game, your flashcards stay challenging, and you get a constant sense of accomplishment when you review them. Second, you're going to use these flashcards to remember multi-sensory experiences, rather than just facts. You'll take a word like déjeuner, lunch, and connect it to a tasty memory. Then, every time you see déjeuner, your mind will instantly wander to that crispy baguette full of butter and brie, and honey, and walnuts, that you once bought from a street vendor in Paris. You can accomplish this in three ways. By using pictures instead of translations, for instance, a picture of a delicious brie baguette, by finding fitting memories for each word, a lunch in Paris, and by leaving little reminders of those memories on your flashcards, Paris, 2002. This will make your review process much more enjoyable and much more effective. Last, you're not studying for a boring test. You're teaching yourself about intensely interesting topics. You're looking for the mysteries hidden beneath the surface of every word and grammar rule. What makes a word like gatto different from cat? How can you use German grammar to think in a completely new way? Rather than learning forgettable translations, you're learning to become a treasure hunter. And you're going to use your flashcards to remind you of your adventures. Let's begin. We'll start with the basic principles that underlie these cards, and then walk through each category of cards in order. Sound from Chapter 3, Basic Vocabulary from Chapter 4, Grammar from Chapter 5, and Advanced Vocabulary from Chapter 6. You'll stick the cards you've created into your SRS, play the game on a daily basis, and end up with a fully formed language in your head, ready for reading Japanese comics, watching German films, or chatting with Brazilian waiters. The Basic Design Principles. We're building upon ideas introduced in Chapters 2 and 3. If you haven't gone through them yet, do that now. Chapter 2 explained why we're using flashcards, how to use an SRS to schedule your review sessions for maximum efficiency, and how to make each flashcard as memorable as possible by linking sounds, spellings, concepts, and personal connections to every fact you learned. At the end of Chapter 3, we investigated the more is less paradox, that learning more information about a topic can help you learn in less time. We'll add two basic design principles to these ideas. One, many simple cards are better than a few complex cards. And two, always ask for one correct answer at a time. The first of these principles is mostly a matter of attention. You can only focus on one thing at a time. SRSs can help you learn and retain large numbers of facts quickly, but they can't enable you to think of many different facts at once. The English word set has 464 definitions. If, for some crazy reason, you wanted to learn all of them, you are not going to do it with a single flashcard. You'll need around 464 of them to help direct your attention to each definition in its turn. We are not going to write 464 flashcards for every word. You don't need to memorize your words in such depth. But you will need multiple flashcards. After all, you're creating complex structures in your mind. You'll want each word to bring out an explosion of associations, sounds, spellings, multiple definitions, grammatical features, memories, and emotions. You'll build these associations fastest if you tackle them one flashcard at a time. The second principle, always ask for one correct answer. It's just an extension of the first. We want these flashcards to be easy. You won't have a good time if you're stuck trying to remember the spelling and pronunciation of all 12 months of the year at once. As we've said, you can only focus on one thing at a time. So when a flashcard asks you a question with more than one right answer, how do I make a k sound in English? The answer, with a C or a K or a CK? Then accept any right answer, with a C, as correct. You can make sure you know all the answers by creating additional flashcards. E.g., what sound does the CK in rock make? This way, your flashcard review sessions will stay fun, quick, and effective. How many flashcards do you need? Different tracks for different needs. The more flashcards you make for the same information, the easier time you'll have. Suppose you're learning the word chèvre, goat. You could make one flashcard that asks, what is a chèvre? And another flashcard that asks, what's this? And then shows you a picture of a goat. Both flashcards will teach you about the same word, but they train different chèvre-related skills. If you use both types, you'll have a much easier time remembering chèvre when you're studying. We could keep going. How do you pronounce C-H-E with an accent V-R-E? How do you spell the word pronounced chèvre? What's a food that chèvre eat? What colors do chèvre come in? What is your least favorite memory of a chèvre? But eventually, you're going to get sick of chèvre, and your flashcards will be too easy. You'll get bored, and you'll spend forever creating your flashcards. There is a balance here, naturally. And you need to find your own comfort level as you progress. I'll give you three different tracks for three different scenarios. Track one, the intensive track. You're learning Chinese, Arabic, Japanese, or Korean, and you have never learned another language before. You need some extra cards to help you remember your words and grammar rules because they are so distant from the words and grammar rules you already know. Track two, the normal track. You're studying some other language, say French, for the first time. You need some help remembering your words and grammar rules, but not as much as a learner of Chinese. This is the balanced approach you'd want for a language that isn't one of the hardest four. Track three, the refresher track. You've taken 4 years of French in school, but you've forgotten a lot of it. You just need a few reminders about your words and grammar rules. The only real difference among the three tracks is how many cards you make per sound, word, or grammatical concept. If you've taken French already, you may only need a single flashcard to keep a word like portefeuille, wallet, in your head. Of the three cards listed in the word section of the gallery, you'll just make the card labeled refresher track. On the other hand, if this is your first encounter with French, you might need two flashcards to remember that same portefeuille. You'll make the two cards labeled normal track. In the same vein, if this is your first time with Arabic, you'll probably need all three cards labeled intensive track to remember the Arabic word for wallet. These guidelines are just that. Guidelines. If you're having a hard time with a specific concept, for instance, chèvre, then by all means add additional cards that put a slightly different spin on closely related information. What's a baby chèvre called? In this case, a chevreau. What's a chevreau turn into when it grows up? A chèvre. Any time you have a lot of trouble with a word or grammatical rule, just make a few new cards on a closely related theme, and it'll become much easier to remember. If you're using a Leitner box instead of a computer, you'll need more time to make cards than your Anki using friends. They can press a single button and create three cards at once, and you have to make each one yourself. If card creation on the intensive or normal tracks seems overwhelming or tedious, jump down to the refresher track, even if you're just starting with a language. While you'll have fewer cards to review, you may find that you don't need as many reviews because you've spent extra time and effort physically making your cards. You can always add new cards later if you need them. A quick note for learners of Chinese and Japanese. Chinese and Japanese, and to a much lesser extent Korean, use a set of characters known as logograms. In contrast with alphabets, logograms correspond to words or chunks of words rather than sounds. These can be tricky to learn, If you're learning either of these languages, or if you want to learn something really wacky like ancient Egyptian hieroglyphics, then go to fluent-forever.com/logograms, L-O-G-O-G-R-A-M-S, for a handful of supplementary flashcard designs and strategies to make them easier. The Art of Flashcards. How to make them, how to review them. In each chapter of this book, we talked about ways to explore your target language. We began with sound and discovered a world of new sounds to hear and create. We looked at words and found that beneath every translation, a symphony of images and associations waits for us. And we looked at sentences and discovered how grammar can take a handful of words and string them into thoughts of limitless complexity. The process of exploring a language is the core of learning a language. Every time you discover a new sound, a new word, or a new grammatical construction, you've planted a seed in your mind. These seeds will grow into fluency, provided you can retain them. To do this, you'll be using flashcards. Each flashcard will contain a small memento or two of your exploration process, just enough to remind you of your journeys and discoveries. The flashcard creation process is relatively simple, and we'll walk through every step in this section. We'll discuss model flashcards that you can use, and we'll talk about which ones you need. Then, when you're ready to learn, you'll utilize those flashcards as models for your own. If you're making your flashcards by hand, you'll simply use these ideas, substituting in your words, images, and memories for the ones we talk about in this book. If you're using Anki, then you'll type, copy, and/or drag your information into the appropriate boxes. Then you'll click the Add Card button and get something like this. On the front side of your flashcard, you might see the word Mochka, M-A-C-S-K-A, and on the back side, you might see a picture of a cat with the word Lily underneath and a recording, Mochka. The cards you make are your own. On this example card, Lily helped me remember my favorite Mochka, but it won't do much for you. Similarly, the picture that I might choose will help remind me of my experiences on Google Images, looking at bunches of Hungarian cats. I might even remember downloading a recording from Forvo.com that said Mochka, and trying to mimic that tricky Hungarian A vowel. It's a cross between A and A. A, Mochka. Each of these experiences was fun for me. And so my flashcard brings back all sorts of enjoyable Mochka-related memories. When you review your flashcards, they'll do the same for you. The review process. The first thing you'll see whenever you review a flashcard is the front side. It poses the following question. What's on the back side of this card? You might be looking at a picture of a cat and need to remember the Hungarian word Mochka, or you might see the word Mochka and need to remember a picture of a cat. You're building a connection in your mind between a stimulus, for instance the word Mochka, and a response, a picture of a cat. But let's get a little more specific. Do you need to remember a picture of a Mochka, or how to say the word? These connections are more complex than a single thread connecting two ideas. You're creating networks of connections among sounds, spellings, and images. And this is a good thing. After all, memories are networks, and the more connections they contain, the easier they are to recall. Neurons that fire together wire together. You want as many neurons as possible to fire every time you encounter your Mochka. Ideally, you want your word to provoke an explosion of associations in your brain. The spelling, M-A-C-S-K-A, the pronunciation, Mochka, how you'd use it in a sentence, 1,000 images of each Mochka you've ever met. You'd even want to hear other words, related words like forok, tail, or words with similar sounds and spellings like motrots, mattress. You're trying to create as loud and varied a response as possible, and you'll do it one flashcard at a time. To accomplish this, you need balance. If you spend 10 minutes ruminating about every Mochka you've ever seen whenever you pick up a flashcard, you're not going to learn Hungarian very quickly. You need a way to add connections to your words without wasting time. So when I introduce a flashcard design, I'll identify the most essential facts. In this case, you won't get very far with Mochka if you don't know what Mochka means, or if you can't actually say the word out loud. These are the essential facts we need. But there are also a lot of facts that would be nice to remember. We'll call these bonus points. You get a bonus point whenever you add a non-essential connection to a word, while it is essential that you remember how to say mochko. It'd be nice if you remembered that motroc, mattress, starts with the same letters. If you remember both, you get a bonus point. Yay! You'll remember mochko, and motroc for that matter, better the next time you see it. And if you don't, that's fine. They're just fake points anyway, and you might get one next time around. Here are the bonus points for our theoretical mochko card. Bonus points. If you can think of these when you review, you'll have an easier time remembering next time. Bonus point number one, personal connections. Can you think of any personal connections with this word? Do you like cats? Can you think of a cat you know? In my case, my cat's name is Lily. Bonus point number two, similar sounding words. Can you think of any other Hungarian words that start with the same sound or spelling? In this case, motroc, mattress, also starts with mo. Bonus point number three, related words. Can you think of any other Hungarian words that relate to this word in meaning? For instance, farok, tail, kutyo, dog, or allot, animal. When you review your cards, give yourself 5 to 10 seconds. Recall whatever you can, then turn the card over, or press the turn card over button if you're on a computer, and check your answers on the back side. If you remembered all of the essential facts, you win. If you're using a Leitner box, you'll move this card into the next section in your box, and you'll review it again in a few days or weeks. If you're using Anki, you'll click the I Remember This button, and it'll make sure you see the card less often. If you forget an essential fact, then you'll want to see this card more often. With a Leitner box, you'll move that card back into the first section of your box. With Anki, you'll click on I Forgot. You'll see that card more frequently, until it sticks for good. If you remembered some bonus points, then you can pat yourself on the back. You just made your reviews easier for the rest of your learning process. If not, you still won the game. Congratulate yourself anyway. You remember that mochko is a cat, and it's pronounced mochko, your two main goals. Take a few seconds to think of a connection or two you can make next time. Think of your favorite mochko or some other word you've learned that has anything to do with mochko, and then move to the next card. One quick time-saving tip. If you're using Anki, get my free demo deck. It's all set up to generate every card in this book automatically. You assemble the information, the spellings, the recordings, the personal connections, etc., and it spits out all the cards you could want. You'll find it at fluent-forever.com/gallery. The three tracks. The more cards you make per word, sound, or grammatical concept, the easier time you'll have. Every time I introduce you to a new flashcard design, I'll also discuss whether you'd use it on the intensive track, the normal track, the refresher track, or all three. We're just about ready to start making flashcards. We'll do a quick recap of what you've done already, and then delve into each chapter's cards. What you've done already. From Chapter 2, Setting Up Your SRS. If you've chosen Anki, you've watched tutorials on how to use it. They've taught you how to make a basic flashcard, how to insert audio files and images into your cards, and how to review those cards once you're ready to learn. You've also downloaded and installed my demo deck, so your main job involves finding information and recordings, putting them in the right boxes, and clicking the Add Flashcards button. If you've chosen a Leitner box, you've listened to Appendix 3, gone out to your local office supply store, and purchased your materials. You have an index card file box full of dividers, a stack of blank index cards, some pencils, and a calendar in front of you. And today is day one. You also remember my earlier caveat. Since paper flashcards can't talk, you're going to take extra care to learn a phonetic alphabet and to listen to recordings of example words when you write your flashcards. The first gallery. Do-it-yourself pronunciation trainers. Cards for Chapter 3. In this section, we're going to talk about how to build a pronunciation trainer for your new language. These trainers are a lot of fun to use. You listen to a bunch of crazy new sounds and learn weird spellings and example words, and alphabets, depending upon your language. Then you press buttons on your computer or smartphone or shuffle around flashcards in your Leitner box until those sounds and spellings are deeply implanted in your brain. Aside from being fun, they save you an enormous amount of time, because they make the rest of your language much easier to remember. Perhaps you still remember our discussion about Mjöðr in Chapter 2. Before we begin, a caveat. These trainers can take time to create. They combine a great deal of information at once, recordings, spellings, phonetic alphabets, and bunches of example words. I'll show you how to make them step by step. But there's another option that skips all of this hullabaloo. In all likelihood, I've made a trainer for your language already. If you listen to the upcoming instructions and feel the least bit squeamish, then go get a trainer off of my website, fluent-forever.com/chapter-3. They're effective, they're a lot of fun, and I'm not aware of any faster or easier way to learn the pronunciation of a new language. I made them because I want this process to be as easy as possible. I'd rather you not run off screaming before you even start to learn vocabulary. If I haven't yet made a pronunciation trainer for your language, or if you're more of a do-it-yourselfer, then we'll get started now. Step 1. Get your bearings. Open your grammar or pronunciation book and read the introduction to your new language's alphabet and sound system. Usually, any problem sounds will be singled out and discussed in depth. Read about them and listen to them, either using the recordings that came with your book or Forvo.com. Sounds that are difficult to hear are your first priority, and your book will likely discuss them and give you minimal pairs as examples. Korean textbooks, for instance, often start with the dreaded and nearly indistinguishable pul, grass, pul, horn, and pul, fire. Listen to them repeatedly, or turn them into minimal pair tests using one of my online tutorials at fluentforever.com/chapter-3, until you begin to get a sense of which sound is which. Once you can hear the differences between each of the sounds, focus on every new sound that doesn't seem to agree with your tongue. If your book doesn't discuss how to produce those sounds, go to Appendix 4 and see how they fit into your mouth. Keep imitating your recordings while you're paying attention to your tongue, lips, and throat until you roughly understand how to form each sound. If you're having a seriously difficult time with a certain sound, consult YouTube or work with a tutor on italki.com until you're comfortable. Now you can start making some flashcards. You'll create 80 for something like Spanish, all the way up to 240 for something like Japanese, which will take you 1 to 3 hours to design and 3 to 8 days to learn at 30 minutes a day. In the process, you'll learn a bunch of new words, listen to a bunch of recordings, and begin to acquaint yourself with your new language. If you're using Anki, you'll be downloading recordings of example words and putting them into your flashcards. Since you're using recordings, you can skip including phonetic transcriptions on your flashcards. On the other hand, if you're using a Leitner box, you'll be relying heavily on phonetic transcriptions. And while you're at it, make sure that you also regularly listen to recordings as a supplement. There is no use in memorizing that the German's A with an umlaut sounds like some weird symbol if you don't know what that weird symbol sounds like. This one sounds like eh. Step 2. Get your information. We're going to connect 3 chunks of information for each sound in your new language. Chunk 1. Sound. What's this sound? What is it like? If it's a new sound for you, how does it fit in your mouth? Your resources for sounds are your grammar or pronunciation book, Appendix 4 of this book, Wikipedia articles like IPA for Spanish or French or whatever, and Forvo.com. Chunk number 2. Spelling. How do I spell this sound? Your resources for spelling include your grammar book, your dictionary of choice, or a Lonely Planet pocket phrasebook. And chunk number 3. An example word. What's an example word for this sound? Your resources here, the glossary section of your grammar book, or the dictionary section of a pocket phrasebook. Step 3. Make your cards. You're going to be making 2 card types per sound. I've already stripped these flashcards down to the bare essentials, so the intensive, normal, and refresher tracks are all the same. Card type number 1. What does this spelling sound like. E.g., A with an umlaut, as in German's lächeln, smile, sounds like ä, lächeln. Card type number 2. How do you spell this example word? E.g., if you hear a recording of lächeln, how do you spell that? L, A with an umlaut, C-H-E-L-N. We'll start by discussing card type 1. What does the spelling sound like in more depth? Here is where you'll begin to tie spellings to sounds. You'll need example words for every spelling sound combination in your language. You'll probably find a good list of these in the beginning of your grammar book. But if not, you can refer to Wikipedia. Search for IPA for Spanish, IPA for French, and so on. If you're using Anki, feel free to ignore the phonetic alphabet part. You're just going to take the example words and find recordings of each. So let's talk about what this flashcard looks like. In this example, we're learning the sound ä, as in lächeln, the German word for smile. On the front side of this flashcard, you're going to have a question. What sound does this spelling make? And then you're going to just write A with an umlaut, as in L, A with an umlaut, C-H-E-L-N. And then you'll include a picture of smiling. On the back side, for a digital card, you'll include a recording of the word lächeln. And for written cards, you'll include that written in phonetic script. So let's talk about essential facts and bonus points for this flashcard. Essential fact. You need to remember this. Sound. What sound does this spelling make? Can you say it out loud? If this spelling can make a few different sounds, as in English's infamous tough, though, through, thought, then you'll make a flashcard for each of these different sounds, with an appropriate example word for each one. In this case, the A with an umlaut, as in L-A with umlaut, C-H-E-L-N, sounds like E. Bonus points. If you can think of some of these when you review, you're going to have an easier time remembering next time. Bonus point 1, the whole word. Can you pronounce the whole word rather than just the sound in the middle of it? Can you say lächeln rather than just ä? If so, you get a bonus point. Bonus point number 2, example word. Can you think of any other word that uses this sound? Can you remember how it's spelled, how it's pronounced, or what it means? When you're making these flashcards, use a recording of the entire example word, lächeln, rather than the individual sound, ä. In part, this is because it is difficult to find recordings of every individual sound in a language. It's even hard to make them. Remember that these are sounds rather than just letters, and sometimes sounds don't show up on their own. While we know how to pronounce the letter U, it's pretty difficult to pronounce a good, accurate U as in put, without that P and T nearby. Try it. It's kind of tricky. So instead, just grab complete recordings of example words. You'll be able to find them quickly on Forvo.com. Whenever possible, choose example words that are easy to visualize. Generally, your textbook will give you a list of example words and spellings in the first chapter or two. If these are concrete and easy to visualize, P is for pizza, GN is for gnocchi, then use them. But if not, A is for abstraction. Then find some similarly spelled words in the glossary at the end of your book. If your textbook doesn't discuss pronunciation at all, well, then throw it away and get a better one, and send an angry letter to the author while you're at it. Once you have good examples for every sound and spelling combination, grab a picture of each example word from Google Images and stick it on the front side of each card. This will help you remember your spelling, sound, and example word in the future. You can use these cards to learn a new alphabet, too. In this next example, we're going to be learning the Russian p sound, which looks like the mathematical symbol for pi. To learn it, we'll use the Russian word for passport, which sounds like pasport. Just as before, you have the same question on the front of that flashcard. What sound does this spelling make? But in this case, instead of writing A with an umlaut as in lächeln, you're going to be writing in Russian, the pi symbol as in pasport, written out in Russian. On the back of the card, again, you'll have a recording of pasport, or you'll have the word and the sound written out in phonetic script. A quick note for those of you who are studying Chinese or Japanese. Both of these languages use characters that mainly correspond to words rather than phonetic information. Since we're currently focusing on sound, we'll use alternate writing systems. For Chinese, you should learn your sounds in the pinyin alphabet. And in Japanese, you should do this in hiragana and katakana, the two writing systems used in Japanese that contain sound information. Now let's talk about card type number two. How do you spell this word? You can reuse each of your example words to help ingrain the spelling rules of your new language. In this example, we're going to reuse the German word lächeln, or smile. The cards are going to look like this. On the front side of the card, you're going to have a question. How do you spell this word? You'll have a picture of your example word, and for digital cards, you'll have a recording. Lächeln. In the case of paper cards, you'll have to use a phonetic transcription of that word. On the back side of the card, all you have is your example word. L, A with an umlaut, C-H-E-L-N. Now let's talk about essential facts and bonus points. In this case, there is only one essential fact and no bonus points. The essential fact is the spelling. Based upon that recording or that phonetic transcription, can you remember how to spell this word? Can you recall L, A with an umlaut, C-H-E-L-N? These cards may be tricky in the beginning. Each card combines a bunch of spelling rules at once. Since you haven't even learned all of them yet, you may have a hard time remembering each example word's spelling. Don't worry. Within a few days, you'll cover all possible spellings and sounds, and you'll start to have a much easier time. Your SRS will make sure that you review your flashcards efficiently, and you'll be spitting out German words in no time. Step 4. Follow your spaced repetition system and learn your cards. Learn 30 flashcards a day. As you learn them, you'll tell your SRS what you remember. If you're using Anki, you'll be clicking on one of the buttons that correspond to, "Yep, I remember," or "Oops, I forgot." And it will automatically schedule your cards accordingly, so that you review each of your cards near the ideal moment, right before you forget them. If you're using a Leitner box, you'll follow the rules of the Leitner box game, moving cards you remember forward and cards you forget back. Once you've done this for a week or two, you'll be ready to move on to vocabulary. The second gallery, your first words. Cards for Chapter 4. Remember those 625 words from Chapter 4? Here's how you'll learn them. These flashcards are a lot of fun to create. You get to play with all sorts of cool tools, Google Images, mnemonics, recordings, and personal experiences. And they're extremely effective. Because you're not using English, you're learning to think in your target language, which makes each of these words easier to remember and a lot more useful in the long run than a simple and boring translation. In the first gallery, we had two cards per sound and spelling. In this gallery, we have up to three, depending upon which track, refresher, normal, or intensive, you choose. We'll discuss these basic three types of flashcards and then talk about a few special scenarios. What you'll do when your word has multiple definitions, a bar for drinks versus a bar of chocolate, or synonyms, a dish, a plate, how to learn category words, fruit, animal, noun, verb, and how to learn words with easily confounded pictures, to kiss versus a kiss, girl versus daughter, see versus ocean. Then we'll cover a couple of card types for mnemonics, if you wish to use them in your studies. When you're done, you'll have 625 to 1,875 cards, which will take you 1 to 3 months to learn with your SRS, or less time if you review for more than 30 minutes a day. You'll leave with a solid foundation in the words and sounds of your language. Once you get to grammar, you'll already know most of the vocabulary you need, so you can focus on stringing your words together into thoughts and stories. The discovery process. Get your information. We're trying to connect 4 or 5 chunks of information for every word in your new language. Chunk number 1. Spelling. How do I spell this word? Your resources for this include the glossary at the end of your grammar book, the dictionary at the end of a pocket phrasebook, or a standard dictionary. Chunk number 2. Pronunciation. How does this word fit into my mouth? Your resources for this include Forvo.com for recordings, Wiktionary.org for IPA pronunciation, and your own dictionary's phonetic transcriptions. Chunk number 3. Picture the Spot the Differences game. What does this word really mean? Is it different than I expected? How can I capture that in a picture? Your resources for this are Google Images, ideally Google Images inside of Google Translate, which you can set up at fluent-forever.com/chapter-4. Chunk number 4. Personal Connection. The Memory Game. What's this word mean to me? When's the last time I encountered this thing or this action or this adjective? Chunk number 5. Gender. The Mnemonic Imagery Game. If your language uses grammatical gender. If this word is a noun, what's the gender of the word? If you're using mnemonic imagery, can you imagine your mnemonic interacting with your new word? In the process of investigating these 4 or 5 facts, you'll form deep, multisensory experiences with each word you learn. The whole process is relatively quick, 1 to 3 minutes per word, and a lot of fun. You're discovering your words rather than simply memorizing them, and as a result, you'll remember them for much longer. Then, you'll take little reminders of your discoveries and turn them into flashcards. Make your cards. The intensive track, 3 card types per word. The normal track, 2 card types per word. The refresher track, 1 card type per word. We're going to be discussing 3 cards for the French word chat, cat. Card type 1, what does this word mean? Can you say it out loud? E.g., chat is a picture of a cat, pronounced chat. Card type 2, what's the word for this image? Can you say that word out loud? E.g., if you see a picture of a cat, that's chat. Card type 3, how do you spell this word? E.g., if you see a picture of a cat and you hear sha, you need to spell that C-H-A-T. The 3 tracks. Our 3 types of flashcards focus on 3 different aspects of each word: comprehension, production, and spelling. These cards work together to help you remember what a word means, when to say it, and how to spell it. Like the rest of the cards we've talked about, I've included suggestions about how many cards to make. If you're studying Chinese, Japanese, Korean, or Arabic, you should make all 3 cards for every word you learn in the intensive track. If you're studying another language, the normal track, you can skip the 3rd card on spelling. If you're already an intermediate speaker, the refresher track, then you can also skip the 2nd card, which matches an image to a word. You'll only make the 1st card for each word. Stick to these guidelines once you've learned a few hundred words and you feel comfortable with your progress. But if you're an absolute beginner, start by making all 3 cards, regardless of your language. In this early stage, your cards are doing double duty, teaching you about your language's phonetic system at the same time as they're teaching you vocabulary. You'll need a little bit more help before you get comfortable with spelling and pronunciation, so don't skip the spelling cards. Even if you're learning a relatively straightforward language like Spanish, phonetically straightforward, that is, you'll know when you don't need them anymore. In Hungarian, which has a very friendly spelling system, I got sick of my spelling cards after 240 words or so. At that point, I dropped back down to 2 cards per word. If I were learning a language with a new alphabet and or a more complex spelling system like Greek, Thai, or French, I'd stick to 3 cards per word for a bit longer. Let's talk about card type number 1. What does this word mean? Comprehension. The front of this flashcard just has a single word on it. In our example, sha, C-H-A-T. And on the back of that flashcard, you're going to see a lot of different information. You're going to see a picture of a cat. You're going to see some kind of personal connection. In my case, I'd put Lily, my childhood cat's name. You're going to put the gender of that word. For French, the gender is usually indicated with an article before it, so you put un chat, a masculine cat. And then for digital flashcards, you'll include a recording of the word chat, and for paper flashcards, you'll include a phonetic transcription. Let's talk about the essential facts and bonus points on this flashcard. Essential facts. You need to remember these. Essential fact number 1, picture. Can you remember what this word means? What's it look like? Essential fact number two, pronunciation. Can you say this word out loud? And essential fact number three, if your language uses it, gender. If this word is a noun, what's the gender of the word? Bonus points. If you can think of some of these when you review, you'll have an easier time remembering next time. Bonus point number one, personal connection. Can you think of the first or the last time you encountered this thing or this action or this adjective or an example of this word that's relevant to your life? Bonus point number two, other words. Can you think of any other words with similar spellings or related meanings? Card type number two. What's the word for this picture? The production card. On the front of this flashcard, you're going to see a picture. In this case, a picture of a cat. And on the back of this flashcard, again, you'll see a lot of information. You'll see the word spelled out, C-H-A-T. You'll see the gender indicated, for French, with an article, un chat, a masculine cat. You'll have your personal connection, in my case, Lily. And for digital flashcards, a recording of the word chat. And for paper ones, a phonetic transcription of that word. You're going to be using card type 2 on the intensive track and on the normal track. Let's talk about the essential facts and bonus points for this flashcard. Essential facts. You need to remember these. Pronunciation. What word does this picture correspond to? Can you say it out loud? Essential fact number 2. Gender, if your language uses it. If this word is a noun, what's the gender of the word? Bonus points. If you can think of some of these when you review, you'll have an easier time remembering next time. Bonus point number one, spelling. Do you remember how to spell this word? Bonus point number two, personal connection. Can you think of the first or last time you encountered this thing, action, or adjective, or an example of this word that's relevant to your life? And bonus point number three, other words. Can you think of any other words with similar spellings or related meanings? Card type number three. How do you spell this word? The spelling card. Card type number three looks like this. On the front of the card, you have a question. How do you spell this word? Along with an image of the word you're trying to spell, and for digital flashcards, a recording, and paper ones, a phonetic transcription. In this case, you might have a picture of a cat, and the recording, sha. On the back of these flashcards, you're going to just have the word spelled out, C-H-A-T in our example, and you can include the gender of the word. So in this case, you might have un chat, a masculine cat. Let's talk about the essential facts and bonus points for this flashcard. Essential fact. You need to remember this. Spelling. Do you remember how to spell this word? Can you remember C-H-A-T? Bonus points. If you can think of these when you review, you'll have an easier time remembering next time. Gender, if your language uses it. If this word is a noun, what's the gender of the word? Bonus point number two, personal connection. Can you think of the first or last time you encountered this thing? Or an example of a word that's relevant to your life? Or, bonus point number three, other words. Can you think of any other words with similar spellings or related meanings? With these three flashcard types, you can memorize almost any of the basic 625 words. You'll discover that they're a lot of fun to create and a lot of fun to review. When you're creating your cards, you'll find all manner of silly French cat pictures or German grandmothers. When you review, you'll remember how you felt when you first found each of these images, and you'll even add a burst of excitement to that memory. I can't believe I still remember that, which makes each word that much more memorable. Next, we're going to go through a few special cases, where we'll slightly modify the three basic types of flashcards to handle a greater variety of words. Four special scenarios. Multiple definitions, synonyms, category words, and easily confounded images. Multiple definitions. Suppose you are learning the English word bar. A bar is usually for drinks, but bars of gold and chocolate bars certainly exist. If you see flashcards with images on the front, that's generally not a problem. If you see an image of a bar for drinks, you can think the word bar. And if you see an image of a chocolate bar, you can also think the word bar. But the other direction, now that gets trickier. What goes on the back side of a flashcard when the front side just says B-A-R? Well, you have two options. You can either put the main definition on the back side, or you can put multiple definitions there. And if you remember any definition, then you should mark yourself as correct. There is no large advantage of one approach, putting a single